are making an application for relief. But we were... Our room was right next to Conley's room, Governor Conley of Texas, and he had a suite there. And so we didn't. We thought, well, probably Big John's going to be on the ticket. But in any event, when the phone did ring and the president was on the line, I said yes before I identified myself, just in case he might have made a mistake. So, so I'm very happy to be here today. Tonight. Whatever. I might say I picked up a little cold a week ago Friday in Houston. We had a little discussion there with Senator Mondale, and standing in that draft for 75 minutes. But I'm starting to recover, and we had a lot of fun that night. And Senator Mondale is my friend. I said it four times. I couldn't get him to say it once, but he is my friend, and next year I hope to see a lot of him when I visit the Senate. But he said the other day that neither Ford nor I were fit to run for dog catcher, and we've got news for him. We're not running for dog catcher. The dogs ought to be happy because we're a couple of go-getters. So, but you know, I have one message for voters in this state, for voters in my state of Kansas. Everywhere I've been the past several days, I've talked about one basic theme. If you're undecided, and I'm really fascinated by the great crowd tonight. It's really tremendous. It's an indication of the strength of the Republican Party and others who are concerned about good government in the state of New Mexico. It's also an indication of the great strength and the great respect you have for our great president, Gerald Ford. I've talked about moral strength in America, and I've talked about our strength in the world, and I've talked about our military strength, and I've directed my remarks to the young men in the audience and to the mothers and the grandmothers, because I think they understand it better than perhaps the fathers do, or maybe even others who are not directly affected. But if you have any doubt in your mind about next Tuesday, I think you would just reflect for a moment on one fact. If you have a son or a grandson, or your daughter has a boyfriend who's of draft age, you're comforted by the fact that we no longer have a draft. And that young man's not going to have to leave his education, not going to have to leave his job. He's not going to have to put on that uniform unless he wants to. I'm very proud of those in uniform. But he's not going to be carted off to some far-off land to fight some battle. We take a lot for granted in America, and we go home at night these days, we turn on our television set. We don't hear the daily body count from South Vietnam, the number of Americans killed or the number of enemy killed. We don't have announcements that in Albuquerque next week we'll have a memorial service for some young American who's been killed fighting for his country. We don't see young men entering the hospital and coming home on leave with an arm missing or a leg missing or in some other way physically or mentally impaired. I think we ought to think about that. You know, President Ford is a great and decent man. He's also a man concerned about the defense of America. He's concerned about our defense for one basic reason, and that's because he wants peace. He wants peace in the world. He wants peace for America. And we can only have peace, my friends, by being strong And we're militarily strong for that reason. And for that reason, we're respected by friend and foe alike. And that's really what it's all about. Oh, yes, we have our problems. We're concerned about unemployment. We're concerned about everything. But our primary concern must be strength. It must be leadership. It must be freedom. And that's where Gerry Ford shines. That's where President Ford, and that's why President Ford offers to everyone in New Mexico and everyone in this audience the kind of leadership that Senator Menendez talked about. Real leadership, genuine leadership, American leadership. And he needs your help on Tuesday. And so I say, think about it. We're not perfect. We've made mistakes. And some may have fault to find with President Ford. That's the American system. My first appearance in this campaign was before a group of Legionnaires in Seattle at their national convention. I'm very proud to be a Legionnaire. I never thought I would... I never thought they'd let a service officer in the American Legion address all those fellows, but they were all there. Governor Carter had been there the day before, and I think he kind of used the American Legion. He got up and he said he was against amnesty because the Legion is against amnesty, but he said he was for a general pardon. Well, that's all. You can be excused any time, yes. But... there's always one Carter supporter in a crowd this size. So, so I looked up the word amnesty in the dictionary since I was going to speak the next day. And lo and behold, it said under amnesty, general pardon. So what he told the Legionnaires was really nothing. But I can tell you, as I told the Legionnaires the next day, and I'll tell you why, we're not for general pardon or general amnesty or general clemency. And let me tell you why. You know, there's still several hundred Americans missing in Southeast Asia. And I think we've got to get our priorities straight in this country. And as far as I'm concerned, my first priority are those forgotten Americans in Southeast Asia, not those who left America in a time of need. Let me also talk to you briefly about Governor Carter's economic policies and his tax reform policies. You know, he gave an interview in the Associated Press. I won't get into any of the other interviews, but he gave one to the Associated Press. Well, some of his interviews were illustrated and others were just plain, but I'll talk about Associated Press. He said in that interview that he didn't think Americans wanted their taxes lowered. Now, is there anybody here that want their taxes lowered? We try to carry a doctor with us to take care of those on-the-spot emergencies. But that's what Governor Carter said. That's what he said. I didn't dream it up. President Ford didn't dream it up. Congressman Lujan didn't dream it up. That's what Governor Carter said. He also said that all income ought to be treated alike. Well, if you're a senior citizen, or if you bought some stock and want to sell it, and think you might get a capital gains treatment, pay only on half the gain. Not anymore under Governor Carter. He's going to treat all income the same. And if you're a farmer and sell your land, all income is treated the same. And if you own breeding stock and sell that breeding stock, the profit's treated all the same. He also said in that interview that those above the median income would pay higher taxes. He made one mistake. He didn't know what the median income was. It's $14,000 for an American family. That's hardly high-income Americans. That's middle-income Americans. The group that President Ford said should have a tax cut, not a tax increase. And most Americans would agree with that. And I was very impressed with Governor Carter, I must say, when he gave his acceptance speech. And he said our national tax system was a disgrace. I was so impressed I turned up the television because I wanted to hear it. He didn't say, and I didn't think he would say, that the Congress has been controlled for 22 years by the liberal Democrats. They write the tax laws. The majority party controls the committees. But even then, I thought he'd made a pretty good point until he ran up the next week, went to New York the next week, and had lunch with a group of small businessmen, Henry Ford and some other small businessmen. And I guess the McDonald's was busy, so they went to a little middle-income luncheon place called Club 21. And he sat down with 52 small businessmen, Henry Ford and others, and the bill was picked up by Coca-Cola Company, another small business. It was $1,500 for lunch. For 52 people, that's probably what you generally spend for lunch. But well, it'd be two tamales and a glass of milk. But he said to Henry and the other small businessmen, said, Henry, don't worry about any tax change. It's going to take me a year to get around to that. This is that same man who said just a week before that our national tax system was a disgrace. And I detect just a bit of hypocrisy there. Just a bit. And then I remember Governor Carter. And I remember Governor Carter standing before an audience of working men and women, telling them how bad the Ford administration was, how we didn't care about people who worked, how our national tax system was a disgrace, how he was going to tax the rich and close the loopholes. That was about the time someone discovered, and he published his tax return, that in 1975, his tax bill was $58,000. Imagine most of you paid about $58,000 in 1975. But he didn't pay $58,000. He took $41,000 off. That's called the investment tax credit. Now, that may be a loophole. I don't know. But when Governor Carter was asked about it, you know what he said? He said with a straight face, not even smiling. He said, that's why our tax laws ought to be reformed. And he said a lot about taxation. He said all church property except the church itself ought to be taxed. Thank you. Thank you, Madeline O'Hare. Yes, well. What about the church schools? And the orphanages, and the senior citizens' homes, and the hospitals. Where does he draw the line? What does he have in mind? And I say with all the earnestness I can muster and all the voice I can muster, I just wish Governor Carter or Jimmy Carter or whatever, would stand up before the American people, maybe buy a little TV time, or maybe have a debate with Mondale or somebody, and tell the American people and stand up and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jimmy Carter. I'm running for president. I want to give you my final position on the issues. This is the last position I'm going to take. Because I think the American people are entitled to know. President Ford doesn't have three positions on each issue. You know where President Ford stands. He's a man of compassion, a man of great leadership, a man concerned about senior citizens, a man concerned about all Americans, and a man of candor and decency and honesty and competence and confidence. And I think when the voters go to the polls next Tuesday, they're going to ask that question if they're undecided. They're going to ask themselves, what does Carter really stand for? And I defy anybody to tell me what he stands for on tax reform, what he stands for on jobs for Americans, what he stands for on an energy policy. I know what he stands for on gun control. He wants you to register and license your handguns. I don't think that's the American policy. That's not the policy favored by most people in this state. But I think Governor Carter ought to tell us. So in the next few days, while you working for Jack Schmidt and Congressman Lujan and President Ford and other